Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us on the line from our Cape Town studio today is Mrs. Lumka Yemgeni, who is Member of Parliament and Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour. It's a pleasure to have you on board. Can you please share with us some of the responsibilities that come with chairing the Portfolio Committee on Labour?
Yes, Doctor. I think it would be important for me to just give a brief background of what are the processes before we start working in the committee. As you know, I am from the ruling party. It holds its congresses every 5 years, and in those congresses, there are resolutions that are taken that are aimed at improving the imbalances of the past that resulted into unequal society. In short, those resolutions of the ANC conference is about delivering services to the people. And after that is done, it is the responsibility of the government to craft those resolutions into implementable policies or programs. And then the parliament kicks in because parliament has to make the legislations where there have to be legislations. That's the role of the committee to pass those legislations. And even before passing those rules, the parliament has to make it a point that it has consulted with the public widely, in particular those who will be affected by the implementation of that legislation. And also the parliament has a responsibility to see or to do oversight, meaning that they must ensure that this implementation of that particular legislation is followed to the latter, because if it's not followed, then it's like there we have legislations that are good but are not bringing anything to the people. So our role is the oversight.
It's absolutely vital that we have the governance, that we keep a good checks and balances, and that everything is in order. And can you tell us, are there any specific milestones that you want to achieve during your term of office?
Definitely, in his State of the Nation address, the President of the country, who is the President of the ANC, made a call that there should be investigations as to how the national minimum wage can be established in South Africa, and that responsibility was given to the Deputy President of the country, Cyril Ramaphosa, to lead it through the social partners in NEDLAC. And that is done, but on our side as the committee, because NEDLAC is an entity of the Department of Labor, meaning a department that we, as the Portfolio Committee on Labor, do oversight on it. So we then ourselves made our own investigation so that when the matter comes to Parliament or when there are queries at any stage by the public or stakeholders, at least Parliament is ready. It knows each and everything. And when it comes as well, Parliament will be ready to question if they have to question somewhere there and there, if they have to contribute or to add, Parliament is ready. So it is our own legacy as the committee of the Portfolio on Labour that the national minimum wage must be established in our term, because if that is done, it will make a difference to the lives of the working poor.
It is a significant undertaking and a very important one at that.
And part of the Department of Labour's practices and activities, it aims to play a significant role in reducing unemployment, poverty and inequality through the various sets of policies and programs that have been developed in consultation with social partners. And those, the three areas that I have as being highlighted are to improve economic efficiency and productivity, for employment creation, to eliminate inequality and discrimination in the workplace. And when undertaking lawmaking and establishing policies, I want to find out, is there a gender lens or a gender perspective that is applied to take into consideration the different needs of men and women? Or are these policies treating people as one, irrespective of their gender?
That's a very important question. You see, in our constitution, Section 3 of our constitution says that all people must be equal before the law, irrespective of the gender affiliation. And therefore, the Department of Labor, in whatever it is doing, in its laws that have been passed to Parliament, they always take into consideration that there is challenges, or there are challenges that are there in the workplace that we have inherited and they are still there. So we do have laws that are dealing with those inequalities. Like, for instance, the amendment that have been made in the Labor Relations Act is to ensure that all people are equal before the law, in the sense that for the same work performed at work by all workers, there should be equal payment. But also there should be a question of maternity when it regards to women. Those interests that are particular or specific to the women that at times become or are used against women, they are there so that women are protected in the process of executing their duties.
Those are all extremely logical and rational points, particularly the fact that there should be equal pay for work of equal value, irrespective of your gender, and that when it comes to elements such as maternity benefits, that there is a slight variance. Mrs. Yangeni, one of the areas that I find is that our working world has been designed what I describe as men's hours, where in effect society is losing half of its best multitaskers from the workforce due to some of the traditional expectations from women. And it has become necessary for women to reform their work timetables to incorporate their family needs. What is your view of this?
It is true that the work contracts world over are mainly designed by men, because of the historical phenomenon whereby men are the ones who are on the top echelons, or who are occupying the highest position, who are in the management level. And as they designed those contracts, they are only interested in the profits, not in human beings. Because those people who are designing those work contracts are fathers, are brothers, are husbands. But when they designed those workers, they forget about that. It's all about profit. They become slave drivers. However, in South Africa, we do have laws that are protecting women. I think I've dealt with this issue, because women at workplace, they are discriminated as women because of what I've said, that the laws, or the mainly the contracts that are done there, are mainly done by men, and it's only for them. That is changing in South Africa, more especially when you look at the government sector and in state institutions. You do have African groups who are dominant there. However, even there, you'll find that there are very few women that are there. But at least they are doing their best. You look at what the president is doing, all the presidents, starting from President Mandela. They make it a point that when appointing their cabinet, they have women who are ministers, not just deputy ministers. They are trying, even now, there has been appointment of women judges. So we are trying, but we are not yet there. We need to work hard to be there. Women must unite. And then, because even if the laws are there that are supporting us, if we are not ensuring that there is enforcement of those laws will just be there.
Mrs. Yengeni, two points that I think are very important there. The first one is when you were talking about that men in upper management are the ones who have been designing and coordinating contracts. Mm. The fact is that most of those men have got wives running their households and they've been doing the elements for their family section. So they haven't really had to consider the other factors, the softer functions that women have to incorporate into their multiplicity of roles. And then the second point that you raised is in terms of how much progress we have made as a country, in particular, from a government point of view, where we've had presidents who've been very strong and very forward-thinking and progressive in terms of having a more inclusive approach and having women reach higher positions and to enforce, in effect, to try to get to our 50-50 even split. Today, we're talking to Mrs. Lumka Yengeni, who is Member of Parliament and Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Also available on DSTV Channel 902. Today we are talking to Mrs. Lumka Yengeni, who is the Member of Parliament and Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous segment, Mrs. Yengeni highlighted some of the tasks of the Portfolio Committee on Labour and mentioned a very important factor which is part of her term and wanting to take responsibility on, and that is about establishing the national minimum wage. We also spoke about the various aspects of legislation that is incorporated and the use of legislation. Now, continuing with our conversation, Mrs. Yengeni, although women constitute 44% of the South African workforce, approximately 80% of the female labour force occupies low-skilled positions. And that was according to findings from Statistics South Africa both in 2010 as well as 2014. What is your intake on this? And is there a plan to improve the situation, such as promoting free educational training for women?
It's an important question. Doctor, we need to speed up the pace of transforming the workplace so that it can equally benefit all workers, irrespective of their gender affiliation. Because despite the skills and development of women, that does not transform into growing of the number of women who are occupying higher positions. The number is still low. So we need to do more in terms of ensuring that there are trainings. And it's not just training, because in most cases, people are trained, and after being trained, they are not placed. So we need to look at the type of the training that we get, that we ensure after those training, people are placed somewhere so that they can get experience. Because in most cases, at times, when you are looking for a job, they are looking for experience, and you can have training. Without experience, it becomes difficult for you to enter in the market.
So we need to have greater follow-through. It's not just about training someone so they're equipped to deal with the situation and have that knowledge, but it's a follow-through, almost a part of the value chain that they go from being a graduate and being absorbed into the workforce.
Yes.
And in terms of beyond our educational elements, what other areas do you think that we can do to help bolster and move more women through the workforce?
I think training, it is important because if we are not concentrating on training in and improving the skills that the women have, this is going to continue the undermining of women and in terms of work and also being put in higher positions. It's not going to stop. So the most important thing for me is that women must be skilled. They must have something that shows that they are equally competent to their men counterpart. So because at this stage, it's not going to be easy for us to just move and just want to be put or given opportunities of work because we are women. We must be given opportunities to work because, you know, there is a potential for a person to be able to do that work. And without training, it's not going to be easy.
I agree with you. And staying with our vein of looking now towards the other 20% of women, in corporate South Africa at senior management level, according to the Business Women's Association of South Africa's 2012 census of Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed companies, women accounted for 21.4% of executive managers, 17.1% directors, 5.5% chairpersons, and only 3.6% of the JSE's CEOs. Now, considering women represent 52% of the South African population, they are significantly underrepresented in both leadership and managerial positions. Taking learnings from the public sector, as we mentioned in government, where women are well represented, how do you think we can improve on the representation of women in leading roles in the corporate and private space?
You know, it is true that women in those in the private sector are really going to nowhere. It's a drop in the ocean when we have to look for women in the management position or in a senior position where decisions are taken. It is really a drop on the ocean. But what the passing of an Employment Equity Act in 17 years ago was a response to a call by both the Congress of the People that was held in 1955 that culminated in a drafting of a document that we have, a policy document of the ANC that we have today, the Freedom Charter, and also our constitution, that we are all equal before the law. So it is, and also it is important that we make a follow-up on the legislations that we have passed that are enforcing the equity in terms of workplace. So if we're not ensuring that we're enforcing that, we're not going to go anywhere with this. It's going to remain the same. It's good that the government is leading by example, but we have to enforce it to the public sector as well. Because despite the fact that we have graduates, we have people, the number of, I mean, we have a very big, large number of women who are graduating every year. But they are nowhere, they are not going anywhere. They are joining the most of them are joining the army of the unemployed. And there is no excuse from the private sector why these people are not absorbed or why these people are not going up to the higher echelons in our economy. So we have a responsibility as women to make a follow-up, to enforce, to fight what is there for us in terms of the law to be implemented.
And you're absolutely right. Women actually make up more. I think approximately a ratio of about 55% more women graduate than men from universities. So women are, in effect, trying to equip themselves from an educational point of view. So that's self-development. And as you say, we have to take more strides and embrace the legislation that is there and is meant to support us and to use that, in effect, to help us within the private sector. Mrs. Yengeni, what areas do you think we need to build on the most to benefit women in the future?
I think unity amongst women is important. So that whatever struggles that we wage in terms of changing our status in this economic status in this society, be it at home or at work, you do need that unity of women so that we assist each other, we advise each other. In that way, I'm sure we will be able, because in the process we'll be teaching each other or assisting each other to go for certain trainings that are going to change our status.
And do you think that in reality 50-50 representation can be achieved in the private sector?
In the private sector, it clearly shows that it is a challenge. Even at this, you don't even talk about 50-50. You'll find two women out of 10 management people, and a number of 10, where 7 or 8 will be male. So, but if it's enforced, it's something, because at this stage, it's not really enforced. But I think the ruling party, it does it in its own structures as a political organization, and it does it in parliament. And if they can do it, I think it is the responsibility of the ruling party through its government to ensure that this 50-50 representation is also met by the private sector. Difficult as it is, it can be started gradually. It's not. It might be not easy to do it as it is easy to do it in government, but they can still do it.
And to your point, the ANC has had 21 years of evidence and proof of having the 50-50 ratios of women representation. Yes. And for that to cascade across into the private sector, that would definitely be a bonus. Mrs. Yengeni, one of the areas that we've been speaking about from a woman's point of view is, I think, the fact that women have to multitask, the fact that it's not just about attending to the needs that they have within their work environment, but it's also all of the things that have to take in consideration of looking after the home, looking after the children. What's your view?
I think the multitasking, or the ability of the women to do, to multitask, it's something that has been imposed by the society on its own. Because if you look at the chores that the woman has to do, she must work, she must look after the kids, she must run the household, and you have a partner at home. You know, the way these patriarchy norms and traditions, we should do away with them. Because it would be easy for women if you have your partner, at least also, it's, you are not asking for a roster in the house where you say today it's me who's going to go to, but at least you need someone who can assist. You know, if you are not there, at least there is someone who can assist. So for me, this multitasking that is only on women, yes, we do it because we grew up in a society that does it, but we have to do away with it. We should work together. The kids are brought by two people on earth, not by one person. And if the responsibilities had to be shared, they must be shared. But of course, as I've said, you are not saying that you have that timetable in the house that says today it's you or today it's me. But it must be something that comes from the bottom of one's heart. Because at times someone will be early from work and we are still at work. But that partner of yours will be waiting for you to come back to cook. Yet we are both from work, we are both tired. You still have to look after the homeworks of the children, many other things that could be shared. But because of the upbringing and the norms that we have inherited from the society, these things, all these responsibilities tend to be, shifted on the shoulders of the women, which is not fair. Yes, they do them.
You're absolutely right. And time again in the conversations that I have with women, the whole issue is about patriarchy, that we have the socialization that needs to be readdressed and, in effect, almost rewiring society of their expectations. And going through, to reiterate your point, it is about having the partnership between a man and a woman with regards to the upbringing of their children and maintaining the household chores, that it should not just be left to a woman to attend to them. Today, we're talking to Mrs. Lumka Yengeni, Member of Parliament and Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Balka every week on this day at this time.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. Today we're talking to Mrs. Lumka Yengeni, Member of Parliament and Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous segment, the focus of the conversation was largely on women in the workforce, how greater efforts have to be made in terms of transforming the workforce. We looked at training, education and experience as being critical factors, and we also looked at more of a softer issue that has a high impact, and that is about patriarchy. Mrs. Yengeni, we're now going into the last segment of the show. One of the questions that I ask all my guests on this program who've made tremendous achievements in their respective fields concerns the factors that contribute to their success. Some speak about perseverance, others talk about hard work, some speak about their mothers. Can you please tell us, in your opinion, what have been the key drivers to your success?
Again, when it comes to my success, or to be where I am today, I am a living product of the ANC. I grew up from the units which are today called branches of the ANC, undergone a number of trainings at home and abroad, political training, during the time when the ANC was unbanned. And it is those trainings and the deployments that I have been given to do that has produced me. It is not myself, of course. When I'm given a task, I am a person who does it to the best of my ability. I think it's a combination of that, of the training, and for me, liking what I'm doing, my work, that's what has produced me or molded me to be who I am today.
Mrs. Yengeni, staying with elements in terms of drivers of your success, can you share with us who've been the strong women in your life?
The first name that came to me, it's Comrade Mama Winnie Mandela. You know, I joined the struggle 1976, during the 1976 Soweto uprising. And that mama has been an inspiration because she was harassed by the apartheid machinery. But at the same time, she was able to look after the family and look after the husband who was behind the bars. She has gone through a number of things, being tortured, but able to carry on and not even fall. And none of the persecution that she received, be it burning her, put her somewhere there, she remained herself and resolute in whatever she was doing. So I got inspiration even long before I met with her, when I was arrested as I was a student. Even if I was in the cells, I would think of that lady and say, who I am. Here I am. I'm a student who does, I don't have kids, I don't really have responsibility, but there are people that you are looking up to who are really inspiring you to be better revolutionaries tomorrow. So to me, she is the best.
Thank you for sharing that touching memory with us. And whilst you were growing up, can you tell us about some of the pivotal moments, the factors that influenced you in those years that had a big impact on you?
I grew up in a very small family and grew up without a father. My mother was a domestic worker who looked after us, and in most cases I would be looking after the kids and work. I think because of that background, it was easy for me to be recruited in the ANC. Of course, you start with student movements and then you're recruited in the ANC and all its alliance partners. So I think poverty, experiences in life, and also being tortured at a young age, it strengthened one to, you know, believe that really the system that was dominant at that stage, it was a system that had to be removed, because the experience in the hands of, you know, well-built, matured men dealing with young students and torturing them at times to death. So that did not make one to retreat. That's what made me to believe that if they could go to that extent of killing, torturing people, it's clear that what we are fighting for, it's worth it. So we also needed the same determination for a better South Africa.
And after all that you've endured in the past, do you think that South Africa's in the right place today?
I think it is in the right direction. We do have political power in our hands. But what is a challenge is that the economy is not in our hands. It is still in the hands of the few. So political power alone is not going to redress the economic challenges of the past easily. So that's why even the ruling party, the ANC, when it says this is the first stage we're still in the process in the National Democratic Revolution, because we have not yet gone where we want to be. So that's the first stage, but we still have to make it a point that we gain economic power, which is a process.
It is, and with every challenge, I think the point is about trying to identify the right solutions to overcome them. Mrs. Yengeni, we're now coming to the end of our discussion. In closing the talk today, could you please share with us a few words of inspiration which you would like to impart on to all those women who are listening to us on the continent today?
Okay. What I can say is that women are a very powerful force. Women are leaders. And the responsibilities that have been entrusted on us, whether it was accidentally some of them, but they have made us to be better leaders. And when we decide on something, we do that. So women must think big. We must go beyond of thinking about quotas, or we must work hard to prove ourselves that we are equally capable like men, be it in the workplace or outside. And this is what we're doing every day. I mean, in every struggle, it doesn't matter where you are, the majority of people, you'll find women. They're everywhere, and they are leaders. But the fact that they are not leading from the top, very few that are on the top, it should not discourage us. I think we should try more and think bigger, you know, and be united as women, not only as women in that country, but across, you know, across our borders. And in that, we will easily part or break this chain of patriarchy that is still affecting many of us.
I think that's a fantastic mantra, which I hope that everyone will adopt, to think big. Mrs. Yengeni, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Doctor.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, and we have been talking to Mrs. Lumka Yengeni, Member of Parliament and Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour.